Welcome to Worst Year Ever, a production of iHeartRadio.
Welcome to the worst year ever. We'll get through it together or not. Everything is so dumb, 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 dumb.
All right, we'll just get started, I guess.
Oh, my.
Yeah. Have we started?
Cody, is this the start of it?
Is this how we're starting?
Are we doing?
Are we here now?
Let's do it at the same time.
Is this the beginning?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow. This is,
oh, we did it. Oh,
hey.
Welcome. Oh, my God.
Professional.
Wow.
We're here now?
Yep.
Oh, okay.
Hi.
Here we are.
Hello.
It's magic. It's magic how that happens. 1 minute we aren't here, and then the next minute we are.
Seamlessly.
Incredible.
Professionally.
Real. Yeah. Hi, guys. Welcome back to the worst year ever. I had to think about it for a second. I was like, yep.
I heard that.
Still
I heard
is.
Your, yeah.
It still is. No fun puns to include or adjust on the fly here. I'm Katie Stoll.
Hi, Katie Stoll.
Hi.
I have a different
Hello.
Name. It's Cody Johnston. Hi.
Cody Johnston.
Yeah. Hey, y'all.
And today, go ahead, you introduce yourself.
Okay. I'm Eve Ettinger. Nice to be here with y'all again.
We're happy to have you back. Robert is not here with us this week.
Good. I get to make all the jokes about him now.
Yeah. Yes. Sophie frantically reached out to Eve and they agreed to join us, which we were thrilled about.
Well, it wasn't frantically.
It wasn't frantic.
Calmly and responsibly.
Calmly and delightedly because it took a she was like, how about Eve? And we were like, yeah, absolutely.
Well, Eve wrote this article for Bustle. Is that correct? Is that the publication?
Yeah.
I think it's pronounced Boussle, yeah.
Boussle, mm-hmm.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you so much, Katie. And I really thought it was something that needed to be talked about even more. It was such a beautifully written article that is so poignant to the times right now. And I loved it. And I'm so glad that Eve has given us their time to talk
thank
about it.
Thank you so much. The fact that people are resonating with it is really depressing, but also really, it's really nice. The response has been really cool to see.
It's absolutely something that we all resonate with right now. And I think the way you put it so eloquently, I mean, in the piece, you could talk about the piece, but it basically something that relating these experiences and these symptoms of burnout to your own experience with CPTSD and seeing those parallels and maybe reframing how we think about what it means to be burnt out. And more people are realizing it as they are experiencing these symptoms that maybe it's not just burnout. Maybe we are experiencing the thing that we all collectively warned about, which was a severe trauma over the past few years, you know?
Well, the way I kind of went into it, and I worked on this piece since August last year, so months and months, and I had to cut so much out of it. And there were so many valuable moments that made it in and others that didn't. And I probably could have written like 10,000 words on it easy. But I kind of went into it being like, my theory is that burnout doesn't exist. It's just complex PTSD for that now, because capitalism is eating the rich alive too. Now we're talking about it.
Right,
we're giving it the, like, you know, fancy name, burnout. And this is not a new phenomenon, and everybody's been experiencing this for forever if you're not privileged and not white. And so with that theory, decided to go see if I could find anything. And oh boy, everybody was way too excited to talk to me. Which is really upsetting.
Yeah, for sure. Do you want to give a brief summary of the article for our listeners? And everyone should go read this article. It's phenomenal.
Yeah, go read and come back.
Pause, go read, come back.
If you don't do that, then.
Yeah.
So basically, in the article, I kind of cover complex PTSD as a phenomenon and comparing it to burnout. So I'm going and asking these people who are pretty open about their experiences of burnout, especially most of them are women of color, talking about you know, what it means to be a really successful person in their field and also experience burnout and how they define it and what, you know, they would like to see happen and change. And then kind of comparing that to my own experience of complex PTSD and like watching the symptoms like dovetail. And then I took this to some researchers, one who's a former family doctor who now specializes in preventing physician burnout and helping hospital administrators like revamp their systems to do that. And, you know, kind of asked him like, what's your take? And he was like, yes, finally. And then this wonderful gentleman named Thanos, who's a researcher. Yeah, the great name. He's a researcher in Scotland. You know, he helped develop the definition of complex PTSD for the, you know, equivalent of the DSM-5 that everybody except for the U.S. uses.
So wait, real quick, just define what DSM guide is for people.
Five. Sorry, the fifth five. Edition. Yeah, DSM is the diagnostic manual, and I'm blanking on the exact acronym, but it's a diagnostic manual that is used to diagnose mental health issues.
Mm-hmm.
So
okay, great.
Complex PTSD is not in it.
Yeah, there's a lot of things that aren't in it that should be in it. There's a lot of things that are in it that shouldn't be in it. There's a lot of things that are mislabeled and
So it's only as good as like what you want to use it for. And it's basically totally. A way of justifying treatment to insurance companies. It's a load of crap.
Yeah.
But Thanos, when I emailed him about it, he was like, oh my God, we've been talking about this. I would love to talk to you. And I was like, oh no, here we go again. So, it seems like one of the interesting things is like burnout is not a medical condition. Burnout is a phenomenon that shows up that can have medical side effects.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But it's not recognized as a medical diagnosable condition. So then what the fuck is it was really what I was trying to figure out.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, it does resonate with everybody right now. I just want to circle back to like this point right now. Everybody's feeling this in different degrees or has been over the past couple of years. And even before that, during this past administration and the world getting worse and climate change, and it's not gonna go away, is I guess my point. And it is a point very well taken that you make in the piece about how it is about the rich white, primarily like people of the world, waking up to the reality that the vast majority of people have been experiencing and the level of anxiety and what that actually physically does to your body. You know, well, Toby was talking about this earlier. There's an element of it that's not even something you can control. It's a physical response.
Mm. Well, and there's also this thing that's happening, and I wasn't really able to include this in the piece, but it was in the back of my mind. It's like, we don't have a way to turn off work in a way that past generations have. So the wealthy have always been a leisure class. Mm-hmm. And now the wealthy are proving that they can work harder than anyone else because they have access to things. And they, you know, they can have someone on call 24/7 and they can have the private jet. And they can be anywhere whenever they want to be. So they're just like, it's not a leisure class anymore. And suddenly they're experiencing that same kind of like loss of margin, loss of space to rest and play as everybody else is. And it's not threatening their, you know, actual existence in the ways that it is everybody else, but they're experiencing some consequences. And so now we're talking about burnout.
Yeah.
Right. They like push like hustle culture and like the grind for so long, and then they adopt it themselves, and then like, oh, wait, this is actually kind of terrible.
Lean in. But maybe we should leave our phones outside of our bedroom at night.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. No TVs in the space where you sleep. For those people that can afford a place with more than one bedroom.
I was going to ask Sophie what about the piece resonated so much because you were very excited to talk about it.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, your connection to the economic system and how burnout is a form of oppression was very something that stuck out to me. I think that, you know, the conversation around complex PTSD is not a conversation that happens very often. I have PTSD, and complex PTSD has never been brought up to me in a professional setting, and has been brought up to me by, you know, a loved one being like, hey, I don't know. Maybe this is what that is. And I'm like, what are you talking about? And so I'm like, what do you mean? I just work too much. I'm just tired. I'm just over, you know, there's a war. The planet's on fire, you know, things like that. And so I think those two things really stuck out to me. And, you know,
yeah,
knowing that you wrote it meant like got my attention because you're so brilliant, and the way you wrote this article, I really loved it.
Well,
Eve,
thank you.
I really loved it.
Yeah. I'm glad that complex PTSD is getting some more attention. It should be understood.
Yeah, and for me that stood out. I had not considered it before. PTSD has seemed like, as much as I talk about it and talk about awareness, as we all do, I think, an awareness of it when people say that they're struggling with it, and but it hasn't seemed like something that I could be experiencing personally. And
me experience trauma? No, I'm fine.
And I have realized that I've had it, but prior to this article, at least in certain arenas of my life, but this really did make me stop and see, like, oh, I see how this is manifesting in different areas and other ways that this is also a trauma response. And for me personally, at least in my past, when I name something, that's the first step towards having relief almost.
Yeah.
So if I'm able to pinpoint, oh, what this physical sensation that I'm experiencing is bigger than me, there's a piece in that. And so it's vitally important, I think, that people are educated, have the tools to understand what's happening in our bodies, because most people don't know. Most of us do not have access to our emotional life and can articulate what we're experiencing. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, this brings me back to the DSM, because like what we have is like, you know, diagnoses. A lot of people treat it as a characteristic, like, I have thin eyebrows, like that. I also have PTSD. I will always have both, like that kind of level of like fixedness to your persona and who you are. And it's the like a diagnosis of a mental health issue is just a description of a cluster of symptoms. Like it's a description of a manifestation of something in your body, and it doesn't describe you. And so I think that's one of the reasons that like there's so much, I don't know if you saw the like piece about like trauma plot that was going around lit Twitter a couple weeks back.
I didn't.
But like there's this like ongoing fight about like, oh, is everything trauma now? And I'm like, yeah, actually.
I was gonna say, kind of.
And that's not interesting. Like it's both. Like, I'm sorry, a rape is not an origin story for like an interesting character. Try harder. And also, everything is probably trauma in ways that you didn't expect. Like your body is going to like react to things, and you're going to carry that with you. And everyone has a different way of like, my personal term for the way I describe like processing intense emotions is emotional metabolism. Like everyone's emotional metabolism has a different rate. Like you're going to carry that in your body for longer or less time, depending on who you are. So like, sure, like something might be really intense and really like, you know, lingering, that for someone else might be minuscule and not a big deal, might just like, you know, they wouldn't even think about it twice.
Also, some of those people that, oh, is everything about trauma? Yes. And you too, sir or madam, or non-binary person, you know, like it's we all have it, and there is a freedom in acknowledging it. The thing that you're carrying that we are ashamed of is rooted in trauma. Like the things that you struggle with are rooted with this, these formative experiences. And if you can acknowledge it, you'll feel better.
The people who bitch about the everything being trauma and using the word trauma too much feel like the same kind of people. And I'm not saying they are the same kind of people, but like they feel similar to the people who are like, well, I got spanked as a kid and I turned out fine. Mm.
Yeah.
No, you didn't. You're saying that. Clearly, you're okay with hitting small people. No.
I was going to say, yeah, like I got spanked when I was a kid and I turned out fine. And so do my kids who I spank. They're fine too. Like, okay, so you're spanking your kids then? So it's yeah. Not,
you're creating
a
cycle.
Is that the healthiest way for you to release your anger or frustration?
Right.
Are they really listening to you? You know. Yeah.
Can I just like check on definitions here, like in terms mm-hmm. of like PTSD versus CPTSD?
Please.
You know, I don't know that everybody's like, you know, like we're talking about, not everybody's run into it. So I'm going to roast Robert and use a Robert metaphor for this. Like you can like cook meat in the ground over a million hours like he does sometimes. Real slowly, real low. And it will taste great. And you can flash cook a steak on a grill real fast and it will also taste great. But, you know, the PTSD is the flash frying. It's a, you know, an isolated incident. You can point to it and say, this is what happened. And like when I got my complex PTSD diagnosis, which like is not really a thing given DSM stuff, but like is a thing. My therapist was like, okay, so like, what's your primary trauma? And I was like, my what? <Right. laughs> I was like, no, that's not a question that will work here. And that's kind of how it is. It's like, this is the slow cooker experience. Like it's the act of cooking is taking so long that you can't delineate it from one to the next. It just like it exists.
Right. You sort of gesturing to everything.
Yeah. It's just it's like, you know, it's the air you breathe. You don't even know that you're in it until you leave it, usually.
Well, yeah. Yeah, that's really well said. Sophie, should we take a break now?
Yeah, this would be a great time to take a break.
I think we're going to take a break.
So
real quick.
Perhaps.
I think so, too.
Perhaps would now be a good time to take a break. I'm just wondering.
Probably. Do we want a break?
Katie, break?
I think.
Yeah.
I think maybe we can do this for another minute and then we take a break.
So
or
in
we
a
can
minute,
just go ahead.
Take a break.
But we spend a minute of asking if we think this
but we
is
should
a good
probably
time to
talk about it first.
Yeah. Yeah.
How do we feel about taking a break?
I don't
not
have feelings
it.
Anymore. I'm dead. Yeah.
Feeling a little too burnt out. You know what? I'm just going to call it. We're going to take a quick break and then we're going to be back.
Welcome to the worst year ever. We'll get through it together or not. Everything is so dumb, 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 dumb.
And we're back from that break, right?
It was good.
We
was
feel
good,
good to be back from break.
Wait, did
right?
we talk about this yet?
We haven't.
We didn't talk about coming back from the break.
I just barged right ahead. I'm so sorry. Okay. I did it again.
Wow. Just
but we're all good.
You know,
we're all good, you say. Okay. Well, thanks for checking in.
We turned out fine.
Yeah. Sophie, why don't you had something interesting you wanted to just start us off with.
We talked a little bit about the first thing that stuck with me from the article, which was, you know, the complex PTSD aspect of it. But I wanted to get into a little bit of, you know, how the economic system influences this and how it can lead to oppression and different things like that. And so,
you know, easy topics like that.
Yeah, really, really easy topics like that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, capitalism is designed to like keep you busy, and capitalism is designed to constantly be taking from someone. And you have to like eat your feelings about that in order to like keep going. And it's that classic MLM. Capitalism is an MLM. That's how, like, we got MLMs. I don't know. But the thing is, like, the way I think about it and the way I was recognizing these things as people were talking about them is I grew up in a fundamentalist group and I consider it a cult. And, like, one of the things that, like, was really useful to keep people from questioning the leadership is to have everyone be constantly on edge about, like, how good they were and, like, whether or not God loved them and, like, how they were measuring up. And so this constant, like, anxiety, this, like, ambient anxiety about, like, your performance and your worthiness, like, kept you, you know, distracted so that you didn't have any energy to, like, think about, like, huh, now how did I end up here? Like, who put you in charge? Why is this a good idea? And I think that, like, having so little margin on life, you know, I talk about, like, room to play and rest. Like, we don't have that in most of our day-to-day lives. And so we don't have time. You cannot be creative unless you're bored a little bit.
Yeah.
So you cannot be, you cannot be able to, like, really analyze, you know, why am I here and do I like this? Unless you have that space. And so, like, getting to a burnout point, having that crisis, like, that point of collapse, like, that's where you finally get time. And that's where you finally realize, like, what the fuck have I been doing? Because capitalism's designed to keep us, like, ambiently anxious and comparing yourselves to everybody else and, like, not questioning anything.
Yeah. You can't recover from that kind of deep fatigue with a long weekend where you're also trying to do your laundry and, like, organize the drawers that you've been putting, you know, whatever it is, like, you get the, you get to the weekend and it's not the same thing. This is, we're talking about,
it's a reset,
recovering,
it's not a
restore. From starvation. Yeah. Like, your body needs to heal deeply. And we don't have time. I recently went through a huge breakup. And this traumatic loss of a family member all at the same time. And it was just ugly, but work was ramping up. And for the rest, I felt so grateful for all of the good opportunities and that I needed to show up for all of them, but I needed to heal too.
Yeah.
And there wasn't time for both of that. And it made my work suffer for a while, you know? And at a certain point, I recognized what was happening and just gave myself permission to cut as many corners as I needed for the remainder of the year, at least. And,
well, that's also,
you know,
like, a hallmark of trauma is, like, you have that, like, that intense hormonal response to get you through the push, and you can't sustain that level of operating. And so you crash afterward. And so, like, I'm really good in a crisis.
Me too.
And then, like, and then, yeah. And then, like, two weeks later, I'll be like, semi-comatose. And, you know, that delayed reaction is, you know, just a part of, like, who I am because of complex PTSD. And I think that, like, we see this all over the place here with, like, you know, people will go through stuff and they'll be like, why am I acting like this, like, a month later or a week later? And I'm just like, yeah, you just went through this, 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 and this. And they're like, oh. And I'm like, you haven't rested. You haven't, like, recovered. You haven't actually processed any of that. You just
been
going.
And our culture doesn't, we don't talk about it, so we don't make space for it, you know, in the same way. And people have that internalized capitalism, that idea of identity connected with our productivity. And so they don't, we all don't feel like we can take that time and space.
Right.
No, we're supposed to endure it and continue.
Yeah. So one of the other things in this article that you wrote that they discuss is, you know, you can wake up, you can do your normal routine, but you're still, like, in this trauma response. And doing your normal routine can be, like, part of that, at least in my experience. It's like, okay.
It's a way, like, it keeps you going. It's a momentum.
Yeah, I can get up. I can do X, Y, and Z. I can do my job. I can call my friends. But, like, you're not your best self in any way, shape, or form. But you're able to, like, go through the motions. If that makes sense. Yeah, that was the other thing. I was like, Eve, there.
Yeah, I'm the friend who's like, so have you eaten today? Did you nap yet? Like, yeah. I'm, as a professor, I try to emulate this with like how I interact and set boundaries with my students. I'm like, I'm not going to respond to things during these hours. Like, right. You can figure it out. Like, if it's a crisis, you will find a way to get in touch with me, but like I'm not going to respond to you right away, because like we have boundaries here. This is not urgent. Like, this is not life or death. This is a fucking college class. This is a 101 level. Like, let's be realistic. And then like I'm gonna have you have a big deadline before break so that you actually have a break. Like,
yeah,
because I want to create as much space as possible. And so I try to lead with that by like, I have to set my own boundaries for myself so that they know how to like interact with that. And it's really hard that like, you know, it's easier to just kind of be on all the time and be constantly thinking about it rather than to like delineate, you know, spaces and times that belong to this and only this.
Well, yeah, you talk a lot a little bit in the piece about like just the environment that you're in. And there's no real like escape or from that environment. You can take a weekend from it, but then you go right back into the environment. And I've talked about this a little bit before, but I'm curious about sort of your like opinion on like working from home, because I think there are a lot of benefits from it.
Yeah.
Sort of separating from like, you know, we all got to go in the same space, and like there are reasons that they want you to come into the office that aren't like about performance or your well-being or like the benefit of the company or anything like that. It's just like we need you here to like watch over you. And there's a lot of aspects there.
I mean, and they're pushing for that at the end.
Yeah, they're
now.
Pushing to get back to get it's back there, but
utter bullshit.
Yeah, but at the same time, like, I'm always thinking about like, yeah, but isn't it also bad to have your workspace be at your home? Like that seems like also, so unhealthy.
But also, like humans have always done that. Like we've like having the workspace be separate from the home is not necessarily like
right.
Consistent phenomenon. So like, I don't know. The way I do it is I just have different spaces for different things. And that's a privilege. That's a huge, huge privilege of where I live and like that I'm able to like afford to have a couple different rooms for things. So like not having my workspace in my bedroom is priority number one. Like no matter what my living situation is, I've always met even in like a studio, just like not having those together so that psychically I'm not in bed thinking about work.
Yes.
Like,
exactly.
It's really important.
Keep that delineation so that rest is rest and work is work. The other is just like, I don't know, putting on pants, like doesn't have to be hard pants, but just like putting on pants, like, you know, again, having that delineation, but also getting out of the house, walking around outside, even if it's 20 minutes, like having a dog has been great for my, my brain because like, she forces me to meet people. She forces me to go outside multiple times a day.
And you have something like, that you have to care about.
Yeah. Right. And then that sort of forces you to like care about yourself in a way.
I've always like, been okay, good about like having something else to care about. Like I'm the oldest of 9 kids. Like I helped raise a bunch of babies. Like I've always had cats. Like that's not the thing. But like the act of having to leave the house, that having a dog has been really revolutionary for me on that regard.
Totally agree.
I'll just throw this out there for anybody listening who lives in a small space or perhaps a studio environment where it's really difficult to find that. It's tough, but with that, there are ways that you can make it feel separate psychically, at least, you know.
you can paint a wall.
You can put a divider up. You can
have a divider up. You can just make sure you're never eating at your desk.
Yeah, little things like that go a long way. Or it's like also because of mindfulness,
like,
but
yeah, like you're saying with like, you know, putting on pants and like we all joke like, yeah, we don't have to put on pants at work, but even like just putting on something is like, this is like my work.
Yeah,
clothes.
I'm awake.
I'm awake. It's like business time. Here we go, and then being able to separate that, and like you were talking about, even with just sort of the communication aspects, I feel like a lot of people, because they're working from home now, also have this pressure of like, well, therefore you're always kind of at work, therefore I can always contact you.
No, absolutely not.
Which is not like, that should not be the case. But I think that's the part of the danger of of this new sort of setup for a lot of people, and a lot of employers want to have that power over people's time when they absolutely shouldn't.
Well, and it's a privacy violation too. Like one of the issues. So I was teaching at a community college in super deep Southwest Appalachia, Southwest Virginia and Appalachia at the start of the pandemic. And so we went online in that community for Zoom, which meant that there would be, there was like a situation, not my class, but a fellow teacher like was teaching a class with multiple Black students in it and a white student who had a Confederate flag in her bedroom behind her camera. And like, is that her space? Her space has now become the classroom. What power do you have to control that space in terms of like, that's a privacy freedom of speech thing, but it's also hate speech being brought into the classroom because the classroom is now here. And those delineations, like we haven't had to navigate this before. Yeah. And so like, you know, it just translates directly to work too. Like, you know, if you're a manager, learn how to use the schedule email function and send things later. Do it just like send it when you're thinking it, but schedule it for tomorrow, because that's, you know, just setting those boundaries for yourself and others is really important.
That's a really good point. The manage thing, I should look into that for people, but it's hard, we have to respect it. You also reminded me of a Reddit thread where a worker, some guy, I'm not going to remember this. He had a life-size cutout of Danny DeVito in the back of his Zoom background. And they wouldn't, unfortunately, the Confederate flag reminded me of this story. And yes, the ethical, the questions, but he's like up and coming. He was, and it became such a problem. It became a fight between him and the manager. And the manager was like, I'm sorry, you're going to have to remove your Danny DeVito cutout. And he was like, no, I'm not. I quit. You can't tell me what to do in my space.
First off, my favorite bar in Roanoke has like...
Who is the asshole? I'm sorry.
My favorite bar in Roanoke, Virginia has these like pin-up Danny DeVito pictures all over. So that reminded me of that. Just fond memories there. But it's, if you have a good relationship with your employees and you're taking care of them and you're interacting with them as a human, you can make an ask like that and not have it be an issue. Mm-hmm. You just like, if you haven't established that rapport, sorry, that's your problem, buddy.
Right. I was like, I guess they didn't want him doing meetings with clients or something with Danny DeVito. And look, you know,
that's
okay.
Hilarious.
I don't know. Anyway, okay.
Method, you know,
not everybody's into that. Come on.
It's like, where do we land on Danny DeVito? He is polarizing. That is for sure.
We're all just thinking of Danny DeVito now. It's like, how do you control that space? Whose is it? Like, these are things that we don't have like a lot of systemic precedent for.
Right. Yeah. Now there's such a push to go back to the office. It's like we're going to just skip over those conversations that could happen now.
Yeah.
You know, you could all just unionize.
Everybody.
Interesting theory.
Interesting theory. The union could negotiate to keep you out of the office. Right.
Depends on who our leadership is, I guess.
I live in Virginia, so it's super hard to unionize here. But
not with the power of Danny DeVito by your side.
To Danny DeVito, I can do all things.
All right, I'm going to make an executive call and we'll take another quick ad break. I'm sorry.
All right,
Katie.
Hopefully Danny DeVito's just voicing all of them.
Oh, please. Yeah.
Always.
I mean, that would be a really smart approach. I made a joke about him
to pay Danny DeVito money to do all the ads.
I think that Danny DeVito is a gem. Okay, we'll be right back.
Welcome to the worst year ever. We'll get through it together.
During the break, I was like, you know, should we just do a national strike? Are we at that point yet? And then Eve was like, well, and they're like, all right, let's come back on air. So go ahead, Eve.
Okay. I mean, so in Minecraft, like just burning it all down seems like one of the only options left at this point. It's like civilizations lasts only so long, and like you like in order to survive, you have to adapt, and like we're not adapting very well. But like one of the things that I have learned as a cult escapee who like ended up losing a large community that I'd grown up in and having to like start from square one with my belief system and my community and like, you know, how I interacted with my family, what I thought about myself and my place in the world.
Yeah.
A lot of people are really up for that level of like risk and commitment. People don't like standing up for things they don't want to be uncomfortable. And forgive me for being super cynical about it, but like on the flip side, it's really frustrating to me because I know that they can do it and they know that you can be fine because I've done it like and I'm fine, like fine. But like, but like you can do it and you can get through it. And a lot of people just can't imagine what that would look like. And I think that's one of the biggest obstacles to something like this. We have a generation that hasn't grown up with a strong labor rights movement, and we don't like have a positive vision for what that future could be. And we really need to get creative with that. Start dreaming.
Yeah, yeah. I think you're correct. I mean, and we are seeing, I would hope, signs of a shift in thinking in, I mean, just the sheer number of strikes and, you know, labor movements over the past year, you know, since the pandemic. And so I do feel hope sometimes, but it is hard to look at.
I mean,
there's just so much. This is the through line of
this
country.
If we could just get it the fuck together to do a national strike on student loans, I feel like the rest would take care of itself. But like,
yeah,
like we have to start with something that like universal.
Yeah.
Cody, you look like you had something.
I agree.
It's just we can't get on like the same page about, you know, anything.
Yeah. I mean, even like, you know, we shouldn't have our healthcare tied to our jobs.
I know. That's what I was going to say. But you can't convince everybody to agree with you on that.
Well, because then
for
also
some
if
reason,
you strike for some
that,
reason.
I can't force everybody to care for other people. Like,
yeah.
But also, yeah, you're asking people to like strike to get healthcare not tied to their job. Well, if I strike, then I don't have the healthcare that I need because I'm on strike. And like you're saying, like there's no real like vision for how it would work. Like, how do you do that and survive?
Well, and the trouble,
I mean, yeah,
the exhausting thing is like other people did this and they didn't have a positive vision for how it would look like. We could do this too. I mean, obviously it's nice to have a model that like you can point to and be like that.
Right.
But like, you know, societies reinvent themselves all the time without a plan.
Yeah. Humans are actually like really, really, really good, interestingly enough, about like adapting.
Yeah,
all the time.
The kids are resilient.
Yes, they are. Not necessarily even like collectively in like like we as a society aren't necessarily good at adapting and saying like we got to do this and then we do it, but you know, when our backs are against the wall, we always seem to pull through.
But to what you're saying about how it's hard to get people. The situation has to be so extreme for people to be willing to risk. You know, the outcome or whatever, the unknown of going up against. I mean, like, yeah, go ahead.
Oh, I'm just, I know she's controversial, but Amanda Palmer had this thing in her book. Yeah, we'll just let that stand. It's fine. We don't need to go there. But like there's this like story that she tells about like, she's like with an older gentleman and there's a dog in the other room and the dog is like lying on a wood floor with like a nail sticking out of it and it keeps whimpering because it's lying on this nail and it's uncomfortable. And she's like, why isn't it moving? And he's like, because it doesn't hurt enough yet. And it's like, we are all that dog is her larger point. And it's like, yeah, like yes, you will stay in an abusive relationship because it doesn't hurt enough yet. Yes, you will stay in an abusive job because it does not hurt enough yet. Because you like being comfortable and you feel like you can like wiggle around just a little bit so like you can make it work. Like you can do anything for 5 more minutes, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think, and the irony being there is so much freedom and peace to be found if you take that leap, that scary thing, that scary step.
And I think this all actually goes back to Eve's article. And,
I mean, it totally does. It does, definitely.
On the economic system and oppression and CPTSD. It all circles back.
Well, and this is like, yeah, CPTSD, like, one of the things it does is it makes you unable to imagine what's going to happen in the future. Like, I have to really, like, actively, proactively plan things. Because usually I'm like, I know what I'm doing tomorrow. I'm like, after that, like, meh. Mm-hmm. Like, that's how my brain defaults. And this is one of those moments where it's like, is it ADHD or is it CPTSD? Probably both. But, like, I've heard enough from the complex PTSD community to think that it's largely that, where it's like, if I, you know, don't, if I don't have to get through it immediately, it doesn't exist. Mm-hmm. And you can't plan a revolution that way.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's like coming back to the, like, just the environment that we're all in now. There's that uncertainty just in, like, you know, I think on an individual level in a lot of people's lives, but also just the world, with things like climate change, with the current war going on, all these sort of things where it's like, I don't know. You don't know what's going to happen the next day. I think a lot of people sort of feel like, well, then why bother planning anything? Why not just live this sort of moment to moment and not think about the future, because we have no idea what will come of the future.
Right, because the assumption is that, like, you don't have control over the future, when actually the fuck you do.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, yeah. It's just, instead of ignoring it and, like, trying to put it out of your mind, like, grab it.
Yeah.
It's yours.
I think 2020 was, like, lighter fluid to that, where it was, like, we were all in this state of, well, I have no idea what's going to happen, so I can't plan anything. I can't even plan my next couple of hours. All right.
Yeah, that's when I was like, oh, fuck, this is bad, because I was like, everybody is relating to time like I do. This is really scary. This is not a, like, I'm the weirdo here. Like, let me stay the weirdo. You all need to stay normal. We have to get through this.
Yeah. I felt the same exact way, Eve. The same way. I was like, okay, I'm used to this, but I don't want anybody else to be. This is not
nobody
right.
else should be here. This is the this is not the side of the table that anybody else should sit at.
Yeah.
I remember going for a walk, a socially distanced walk with my friend during that time. And she went, honestly, Katie, I don't know anyone that isn't just absolutely burning their life down right now. And I was like, yeah. Like, it's just like they're like cutting off that, like having really extreme reactions, like everybody behaving in very erratic ways, well, I guess.
Okay, so here's the other thing. It's like, maybe it wasn't so erratic. Maybe this was all the like stuff that you put off while you were trying to catch up on laundry over the weekend that you like suddenly you had to face because you were in the apartment with it all day, every day. And you're like, I don't like living like this. I'm going to
there's no
fucking
escape
this.
From it.
The number of people who came out as trans during the pandemic.
Yes. Yes.
You just having to like live with yourself and only yourself.
Yeah.
Like reveals so much.
Yeah.
Are there any resources or things that people should know about that that we can give listeners as a guide after reading your article and listening to this discussion?
Okay. I'm going to give you two different versions of these. One is I'm going to give you the recommendation for The Body Keeps the Score, which is ubiquitous.
Oh, I was going to bring it up.
Yeah, Bessel van der Kolk has been accused of predatory behavior in the workplace, so like take that with a grain of salt, but like it is a fucking good book. There's a memoir out, oh my god, I'm blanking on the name of it. Stephanie Fu is the name of the author. and it's a memoir about complex PTSD. I'm only halfway through it, but it's really fucking good and just came out. And then I think it's What My Bones Know.
That is what it is.
Okay, good. Thank you. And then I'm going to give you a couple somatic tips. Just like, so somatic therapy is the only thing that I found that's helped me. If you have access to EMDR through your insurance, or if you can afford to find an EMDR practitioner, is literally the only thing that I have found that has helped it. Because talk therapy and CBT therapy is often counterproductive for complex PTSD. So somatic therapy is really useful. And here's a couple of like tiny somatic hacks that you can do just like in a moment if you're feeling flooded, which is like when you're on the way to being triggered and you're away or on the way to like losing control over your reaction because it's too much. One is called, I mean, my therapist just called it tip tap fingers, but like, I'm sure it has like a more professional name, but you just like take your thumb and you start on your pinkies and you tap your thumb to your pinky, then to your ring finger, then to your middle finger, then to your first finger, and you work your way back the same. So don't double tap, but just go, and you have to do both hands at the same time because it crosses the hemispheres of your brain and makes them sync
up. Wait, that is something that I self-soothe that way.
Your brain cannot spiral while doing that.
This is really effective. I'm doing it right now.
It is integrating the hemispheres of your brain, so you cannot dissociate. You physically cannot dissociate.
No, I just thought I was a weird person who did a weird thing.
No, doing this, yeah, no, that's a thing. That is a fucking thing.
Tip-tap fingers in my notes.
Side question on this, is there something to music, I guess, with this? In how, like, I'm thinking of like playing piano or playing a guitar where like you have this relationship between your hands and your brain.
It's basically can you get out of your like spiral and back into like being present in the moment and like present in your body? So like whatever it is that does that is going to be the thing that's going to like cut that spiral cycle. So if it's like singing or playing an instrument or dancing or like something where you like your mind-body connection gets restored so that you're in sync with yourself, you're present in your body in real time, that's like the fastest way to like cut that cycle. So the other thing that I was going to share is like it's a somatic breathing exercise. You just put your right hand on your heart, your left hand on your abdomen right at like the top of your belly, and you're just like breathing really slowly. It's not just like basic yoga breathing, belly breathing, very slow in and out, you know, count like in four, hold four, out four. But the act of crossing the hands in that position, again, crosses wires in both hemispheres of your brain so that it's, again, you're restoring that somatic rhythm.
Love that.
That makes sense.
This is really helpful.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Wow. The finger thing, I'm like,
you're listening. Such a good hack. It's such a good hack. Like
tip tap fingers like, down.
You can do it, and like people can't see it. You can like have your hands under the table and be doing it. No,
it's a little tiring. It's a little finger workout.
It's not disruptive. There are other exercises like that. I mean, the point is to like get your mind into play mode and distracted, and like present. So it's that like that feeling of looseness and oneness with your body that you're trying to achieve, and whatever gets you there, like go for it.
Absolutely. I'd also heard somebody talk about like cold water, running your cold water over your hands to like get you into your body again, to like connect the sensations and whatnot.
But. And one thing I'll just say is like, if you've experienced a lot of trauma, your body's not going to want to come back. Like you're not going to want to reunite these parts. And it's not going to be easy, and it's going to take practice, and it's going to take time, and it's going to take space. And like, you know, in Minecraft, you might want to do mushrooms.
always,
to get there. You might
want to do it anyway.
I am not in a decrim state, so we're going to do it in Minecraft here. But you know,
fair enough.
but like, there are other ways to get there, but just it requires just kind of allowing your body to take its own time.
Yeah.
Well,
this has been really good, really fascinating.
Eve, is there anything? I'm going to link Eve's article in the episode description, but is there anything you'd like to plug at the end here?
Yeah, I have a podcast co-hosted with Kieran Darkwater. It's called Kitchen Table Cult. We talk about all things fundamentalist Christian and current politics. Super fun that it's still relevant. Would love to be obsolete, but we're not yet. And I don't know. You can find me on Twitter. I hang out there sometimes, unfortunately.
What's your Twitter handle?
It's Eve Ettinger with an underscore in between.
Awesome.
Yeah, follow them, check them out, all the shows. Thank you again so much.
Thank you for having me.
Anytime. You're welcome back anytime.
Truly.
A delight.
All right. Bye, everyone. Follow us at Worst Year Pod, at Cool Zone Media. Have a wonderful day.
We haven't plugged that in so long.
I know. I'm plugging it.
I tried. Yes. Daniel?
Lovely.
Worst Year Ever is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.